good morning and welcome to the award-winning Vectis Radio. I was going to say the award-winning Monday morning show, but we haven't won an award,
but our 4P's course has won an award. Good morning, everyone. It's Jonathan here as well.
And my name's Caroline Diamond. I'm in the studio with Jonathan Bacon and Peter Woodnut. We've got a really busy show lined up. We've got Peter, who's going to be our special guest. We've got Julian Critchley, chair of Isle of Wight Labour, coming in at 12 o'clock. And in between, we'll be doing lots of chat, talking about what's on across the island.
Lots coming up this week, yes.
And if you want to talk to us, give us a call. We're on 01983 240666. You can text in. If you start your message with BR6TT, the text number is 60777. We'd love to hear what you think about what we're doing. Maybe. Anyway.
If it's nice.
Yeah, if it's pleasant. If you haven't got anything nice to say, don't say anything. That's what older people used to say, isn't it, Jonathan? Anyway, Peter, welcome.
Why are you asking me what older people?
Well, you're good.
I'm the older one here.
Welcome to the studio, Peter. Welcome to Vectis Radio.
Thank you very much.
For anybody that doesn't know, and let's be honest, you've been in the local media quite a lot recently, in the county press and the Observer.
Indeed, and tonight as well.
And tonight you're going to be on BBC TV at 7:30. So you're a poet?
Only in recent years.
You're an LGBT.
How would you describe yourself, Peter?
Well, I'm now 77 years old, and I'm beginning to realise what. Sometimes what my father used to say when he was getting old, and I thought, oh, perhaps I should have been a bit more lenient than I was, but I helped look after him and my mother. But old age is a stage we're all going to have to go through, hopefully, but it's the quality of the last bit that counts, and it's come through to me very strongly that by living as easy as you can life with the burdens that you've been given, unfortunately, because we're all going to get something that's going to take us out of the world. Hopefully we will get over the barriers, and as I write in some of my poems, it's keeping a positive outlook on life, and because unless you do, you attract the negative things in life, and that's a downward spiral. And even though you've got things, people say, oh, how are you? And you say, well, I'm all right today. You know, I had a lovely aunt who died at about 95, and she had lung cancer at the end, but very slow growing because she had smoked all her life. But she used to wake up in the morning and say, ah, thank you, God, I've got another day, and get on and live it.
That's a great sentiment. We'll hear a bit more, we'll have some music, and then we'll talk again.
And we're here with Peter Woodnut, who spoke briefly before news. And Peter, I was... what you said was fascinating. I was actually just asking a little bit of background about you, because obviously you are now... Well, we're going to find out you're a media star and author, but many of us who've been on the island for some time will remember a wonderful shop that used to be in Union Street, Woodnuts, funnily enough. And that was you, wasn't it, for many years?
Yes, indeed. My father started the shop in 1947 when he was demobbed out of the RNVR. And he was offered his job back at Holmes & Sons in High Street and Ryde, because he left there in 1939. And he volunteered because he didn't want to be constricted into the... army, because he'd been messing around with boats all his life, and he got into the RNVR, and he had a fantastic time. In, although it was wartime, and he saw many terrible things, but he came out as a fully qualified navigator, and he was part of Lord Lovat's commandos on D-Day, who sailed from Southampton about 12 hours before D-Day. And they took their commanders, because he was he had his own a flotilla of LCIs, landing craft infantry, and there was, I think, 26 in the flotilla by Lord Lovat, and they took over Lord Lovat's commandos, whose task was to take the Pegasus Bridge in France. And the airborne division was, they came in by air to do a two-pronged attack. And as soon as he dropped the troops on the shore, he went off into deep water to wait for the main invasion fleet to appear, and then started ferrying the troops from the ships to the shore on a continuous. He did it for, I think, 48 hours non-stop, and got mentioned in dispatches.
I'm not surprised. That's a fantastic.
And I mean, not all. Some of the LCIs had direct hits. He saw one of his other captains sweeping body parts off the beach because shells had gone off. It was obviously a terrible time. And one time he came in with some troops, and they were all fully laden with all their packs, etc. And unbeknown to my father, a shell had gone off in the water, which he couldn't see. And so there was about a 12-foot hole underneath where they were jumping off, and they just jumped off into nothingness and were never drowned. But he brought them all back without a scratch, and I'm very proud of those at that time he did. Anyway, he always offered his old job back, and he decided to branch off, and he opened his own shop in Union Street in 1947. On the 27th of August.
A day etched in your mind.
Oh, absolutely.
Mind.
Well, it was the shop's birthday. Birthday. And he made all the previous summer, he'd made all the furniture, the counters, and he virtually made everything that was in the shop. You couldn't buy big pieces of glass, so the windows were small pieces of glass with obviously wood between. Anyway, so thus I joined him in 57, and
how long were you there then?
I was there 50 years.
50 years.
I retired in 2007.
And I can remember being, it was one of the outfitters to go to, because I can remember my parents taking me there because I had to have some smart trousers when I was a youngster. And I can remember you there. And it was a fantastic shop. And it then got a further boost of life, didn't it? Because you became Mr. Gadget.
Well, the thing was, people wouldn't pay decent money for clothes. I'm not talking about top end. They wouldn't buy things that would last. So the turnover went down and down and down. And through the suggestion of one of my reps, I said, go and see this guy in Southend-on-Sea, Ravens of Southend-on-Sea. And he turned a basement, because they were in fourth generation, turned a basement into a gift department. And so when I came back, I had lots of ideas, but I went up to Birmingham where the International Gift Fair was. And first year, I just had a look at everything that was on offer, because it's the biggest, the one in February, it's the biggest show ever held in Birmingham, with 22 halls and I don't know how many thousands of exhibitors. And then the following one, I started buying them. I think the girls in the shop, because I had some lovely staff. There was Maura George, Anne Toogood, Avril and June. And I did have a manager years before, but I had to make him redundant in the 89 recession. And they all thought I was a bit mad buying all this stuff, but within about 6 months, it got a lot of interest. And
I think you did particularly well at Christmas, didn't you?
Well, at Christmas, I had one or two customers who used to come down from London, because they had connections on the island. They'd buy all their bits and pieces, and one lady used to do all her own crackers, buy all the little bits to put in them. And but for the first 5 years it was brilliant and the turnover went up, but the next 5 years it did reverse because the internet killed me, and I couldn't match some of the prices they wanted you to, because some people would, you know, they'd go somewhere else for just to save a pound, and they didn't value the service that we always gave, because that I always said to staff, it's the only reason to bring the customer back in, you say, they really liked what they bought, or and they appreciated the service, which is rather lacking today, I think.
Yeah. Now, we could talk, Peter, there's so much we could talk to you about, but I hinted at you being a media star, and maybe we'll hear a little bit more about that in a moment, because you have to head off across the water
this morning.
You're on television tonight, and as I say, we'll talk about that a bit more in a moment. But I did mention you being an author, because I'm keen that we hear some of your poems.
Indeed, I'd love to read them. My main hobby, whoever I've had time, when you run your own business you never do, but was photography. I wasn't particularly bright at school because I was dyslexic, which wasn't really known much about in those days, and so photography was a wonderful medium. But 18 years ago I started to develop a macular degeneration, and although it didn't affect me too much at first, but about 10 years ago, it really was getting very difficult. And there's a reason I really came out of the shop. But I started writing words because I was living with my sister, helping to look after her husband at the time. And I'd never used a computer in our business because we didn't need one. We've got one shop. And until that's all, we didn't want this electronic systems, and the writing's developed over those years. And all being well, next year I'll be publishing an anthology of my work.
Can we hear one of them now?
Yes, indeed.
I think we'd like to try and get a few in.
Well, this is a most recent one, and it's. I feel sometimes I hear something and I feel I've been given these words to hear at the right moment. And this is a couple of lines out of Leonard Cohen's, one of his wonderful songs. I may have a little bit of difficulty, if you'll pardon me, because although I've got it, it's in printed up in very big font.
You're having to use your special magnifier.
I'm having
lens
to use a magnifier. And I haven't read it for a little while. I should have. Anyway, it's called There's a Crack. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. To dispel our inner darkness, then depression cannot win. For the light will empower us. Out of darkness we were led to create a better world. Truth shall guarantee what is said. Know that love is everlasting. Our eternal spirit will survive. Every life is a celebration, so live in the joy of being alive. For light is the friend of hope, guiding us through each day, overshadowed by the doubt that courage will keep at bay. Doubt has but one objective, to negate a positive thought. Each nagging doubt is sown in the depth of a mental wart. Love radiates from the heart to envelop those we forgive. Whosoever reforms their life and a second chance to live. We are part of creation, each shackled to the yoke of time. Include an act of kindness on each mountain that we climb. Love manifests every miracle that explains how the light got in, dispelling an inner darkness to give love a chance to win.
Fantastic, Peter.
And beautifully read as well.
We're having a really interesting conversation with Peter Woodnut, who's got a lot of history here on the Isle of Wight. He had a shop on Union Street, which many of you will have heard of. And Peter, we wanted to talk to you about what it was like growing up as a gay man on the island. You told us you're 77 years old, and obviously things have changed quite dramatically over the years. How did you cope with that, or how did you feel when you were younger? if that's not too personal a question.
No, I'm quite open about it now, but when I was younger, it was, to me, it was a dreadful secret that I was trying to keep hidden, and especially as we had a shop, etc., and people's attitude in those days was far different to what it is now. And because I didn't come out till I was 55.
Wow.
I mean, that's...
Do you regret that now? Do you wish you'd have come out earlier?
The trouble is, I don't think I would have found the language to talk to my parents. That's the biggest thing. I mean, how do you start that? Especially when my father's a bit anti the gay stereotype you would see on television, like John Inman and Larry Grace and the like, and the catchphrases they used to come out with, and they were good entertainers, but majority of gay men, you'd pass in the street, you wouldn't notice.
No.
And and obviously it's the more flamboyant one, perhaps a bit effeminate, who walk a bit mincing a bit, which really, Quentin Crisps of this world.
Yes, yeah.
And because that was a fantastic film they made with Don Hurt, I think.
Did you confide in anybody?
The very first person I ever talked to was my mother liked alternative therapy. She didn't like going to the doctor, so she had a homeopathic doctor who used to come over from Bournemouth. Dr. Browning, I think her name was. And I went to see her one day to talk about mother, but I went over to talk about me. And she said something that first time we met, which really put it into context really for me. And she said, on the extreme left you could have a heterosexual person, and on the extreme right you can have a homosexual person, but in between you've got every shade of grey. And I said, well, yeah, that's...
And that was before the 50 Shades of Grey.
Yes, it was before the 50 Shades, a long time before that. And so it balanced it in my mind a little bit more that, okay, but it was still hell. And
but what changed things? What made you able to come out, Peter? Is there something that helped? Or?
Well, I did a course of NLP. Do you know what NLP is?
Neuro-linguistic programming.
That's right. And I went to someone in London, actually, who connected with... I belong to the Art of Living Foundation, and he did also. And it wasn't cheap, but I learned a lot through that. And he urged me to be more balanced in life. You need to talk about it. But my parents were dead then, so I was able to, eventually.
Sadly, time is going to be beating us because it's coming up to 10 to 11. We've got the news on the hour at 11 o'clock. Would you like to read another poem?
I'll read the poem, which is...
Just before that, though, Peter, I mean, we did hint at your media stardom.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And we really ought to mention that.
We'll quickly mention.
BBC Tonight, Inside Out, you are going to be part of a documentary.
Indeed. It was commissioned... By Southampton University were involved, and they put the project to a lady at Inside Out, and she commissioned it to be made. And it's the third segment. It's about 9.5 minutes,
and it's about this year's Pride.
It's about this year's Pride and diversity. And I haven't seen it yet. I hope to see it this afternoon. And I felt actually. Sitting there being filmed, I felt proud to be doing it, that I was open enough and at the age of 77, as the song out of La Cage aux Folles says, I don't care a damn, I am what I am. And that says, that's a wonderful song, that just says, you know, you accept me as I am. So I wrote a poem called Silent Love, which expresses a lot of sentiments that I've been feeling for a long time in my life. So I'll read it out to you now, if that's okay. I've got time.
That's
now.
Great.
Yeah. It's called Silent Love. Many a son and daughter, may incur a sense of shame, were they to express the love that dare not speak its name. Life is full of ups and downs, don't feel you are to blame. You were gifted with the love that dare not speak its name. Some will never understand. Life permeates every plane. But remember, there is one that dare not speak its name. People will verbally taunt you. Make no response, it's a game. Resolve to reinforce the love that dare not speak its name. When you're cruelly goaded, the ghost of fear will remain, but can never stem the love that dare not speak its name. Homophobia seeks its victim, who is beaten up, left in pain. Brutal ignorance of that love that dare not speak its name. Stand on a giant's shoulders. Reach up in sunshine or rain. Light the beacon for the love that dare not speak its name. Live each day in the moment. Never let your courage wane. You can free the love you feel when you can speak its name.
Thank you very much, Peter. That was absolutely fantastic. We'll break for the news now at 11 o'clock, and then we'll talk a little